And now, without further ado, here is Sarah Reith with our local candidate interview for tonight.
Thanks, Renee. Yeah, we've got our local news tonight. We're speaking live with Joel Soniela, who's running for 2nd District Supervisor. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And before we get started, can you just introduce yourself and talk about your work in the community and why you think that you're the best choice to represent 2nd District?
Yeah, so I've been a resident of Mendocino County my whole life, so caring about the community and what's happening in it is something that just comes natural. It's where I was raised and born, so you know, I have those connections to the community that tie me deeper than just living here and calling it home. And so for me in the community, you know, I've had a lot of different organizations that I've volunteered with and worked with over the years. And do you want me to go into detail with that right now or wait a little?
Well, I'd like you to talk a little bit about your work as a program manager with street medicine in Ukiah.
Okay. So I started working with the hospital in a productivity engineer role. And after that, I moved into a consultant role with them. And then they presented me with this opportunity as I was about to actually go on my own at self-employment. It was a doctor who approached me with the CFO, and they had mentioned that there was this role I thought I'd be perfect for. I had a little bit of grant reporting, data reporting, some financial analysis, budgetary work, and it just kind of fit everything I was looking for in a job at that moment. And so they offered me the role as the program manager of Ukiah Valley Street Medicine. And at the time, I had no idea what this was when I was a financial analyst before for them. Or in the productivity role, you know, I heard street medicine and I always thought, what is this crazy thing? People going out in the streets?
Yeah,
and
what is it?
So when I came on board, I just kind of took a little while to figure out what was going on. And I went to a couple clinics and just really stayed quiet and just focused on really learning about it. And I really quickly learned that there was this model of medicine that doctors have that they're trained in. I got a man named Jim Withers in Pittsburgh. He started a institution teaching doctors how to go out into the streets and actually take medicine to the people where they are. And that's all I needed to know at that point. I was sold. I took a bit of a pay cut for the position because of, you know, how corporate schedules work with pay. But it was something I really wanted to do, so I was willing to take it. And it was it turned into possibly one of the best jobs I'll ever have in my entire life.
And we're talking about people who are living on the streets or in their cars. They do not have homes.
Yeah, everybody that you attend to, it's always clinics at places where people are unsheltered, and you focus on really the underserved populations. So anywhere there's meals, plowshares, and then eventually after I had been in the role and worked with the medical director for about a year, we created policies and procedures that allowed us to take our actual actions to the streets, and we were doing physical backpack rounds with medication. Different antibiotics and you know, stitcher removals, which we didn't do commonly, but it was something if the doctor made the call, we would perform it. And so it really got into a point where we were really taking what doctors do inside their walls out into the world. It was really cool.
And so it sounds like you've got a passion for working with folks who are unsheltered. Can you talk a little bit about how you think that you could improve their situation as a supervisor?
Yeah, so, you know, actually having the boots on the ground experience and actually knowing the people, a lot of them by first and last name. I was always the scribe at our clinics because I needed the notes and everything to be accurate. And so until I was able to train people, I would fall into the scribe role. So I really got to know these people because you have dialogue with them and you talk to them about, you know, their families, where they're from, and you really get to know the people. And that piece of understanding the population more than just you know, thinking you know what they need is, I believe, a really good thing that I can bring to the table.
Yeah. And before we dive into this a little bit more, I want to remind our listeners that at about 6:15, you can also call in with your questions to 895-2448. So I'm going to speak with Joel for a few more minutes, and then listeners, you're welcome to call in. One name that was thrown around a lot in 2018 in March was Dr. Robert Marbot, who was a consultant who came up with a report with, I think, 27 recommendations for how the county can address this issue. And he has come up in the world since then. He's now the homelessness czar in the Trump administration. And one of his recommendations was to have periodic check-ins to see how the report is being implemented. And we've lost at least three people that I know of to death, homeless people dying in parking lots and on the streets this winter. And I'm wondering what you think about the Marbet report at this point. Is that a workable document for our county? Do we need to work with it?
So it's a document that we paid about $50,000 for. So at the end of the day, it has to be something that's workable. Whether or not we follow it like a manuscript exactly is still to be told. I personally did some research on him and met with Dr. Marbet while he was here doing his rounds with our street medicine team. And I didn't align with many of his ideologies or things that he was saying. He told some very off-the-wall stories of going in and dressing up as a homeless person and going out and trying to kind of like blend in and learn about them. And the whole thing just kind of, to me, you know, you don't have to do that to learn about this population. They are willing to tell you stories. And if you're a person who cares about them, they're willing to open up to you. And so, you know, a lot of the recommendations, if you read his reports from all over the country, they're cookie cutter reports. I mean, it's the same thing over and over again. And he gets paid large amounts of money to do these reports with retainers that if you need him to come back and speak to the report, it's $10,000 to $20,000 more just to have him come back to mention what he thinks should be done. So it could potentially turn into, you know, a $70,000 report. That's pretty expensive when there's people in our community, I believe, that understand this population very well, we could have used as a resource.
What are some things that you think could be done to bolster this report, maybe make the best of it and personalize it to the needs of Mendocino County?
So the only thing in there that I really believe he is spot on about is that you have to take care of your local people. There's been some misinformation being thrown around about how many people are actually born and raised or local residents of our community. The true statistic is about 60%. And of that, there is a large population of that are 5+ year residents. So, you know, 60% of the population are people that are ours to take care of. And a large portion of those are born and raised in our community. So I do like that aspect that he brought that to the top and made it something that, you know, everybody was aware of. But the whole thing about under one roof, one shelter, one place to eat, one service provider, that to me is just a wild concept, because people mess up at one place and having a second place to go is possibly their only way to get back on their feet. So, you know, we need competition in the marketplace when it comes to this, anything in the homeless services, because if one person always is saying this is how it's going to be, then there's no innovation that comes, or no technology advancements or need to get any better than what you're currently doing.
All right. And the district that you're hoping to represent is basically Ukiah, which is where the largest concentration of this population is. I want to remind our callers that you are welcome to call in and interview the candidate also if you call 895-2448 and ask candidate Joel Sonila in the 2nd District any questions. Sticking to housing, you've said that you're not afraid of rent control. Can you talk about some of your thoughts on housing in general?
Yeah, we need more of it. Obviously, the reports that are out there show, you know, the amount of housing we need. Everybody knows that. Anyone who goes to rent knows it's you and 30 other people trying to get into one unit, and you're lucky if you do get into that. And you know, rent control is a really, really touchy topic. It angers a lot of people because there's been a lot of large money in the real estate industry that's really backed this campaign against rent controls. And you know, at the end of the day, rent controls can be applied to homes that are newly being built, so that you have it only applying to the new places that are coming into your community. It can be applied in many ways that are beneficial for both parties. And that's what a lot of people don't understand, is that, you know, rent control doesn't just benefit renters. It keeps, you know, the free market conversation always comes up. Well, it's interfering with the free market and that's a bad thing. Well, what the free market is speaking right now, and they're upset and they're tired of not being able to rent, and they're not ever going to be owners most likely in their lifetime. And that is the free market, you know, coming up to a stance and taking their stance. Maybe they're not the owners or the investors, but they're still people in the market. And so, you know, that whole argument is sort of debunked with that.
And there are a couple of housing plans that have been in the docket for quite a while. And I'm thinking of Gardens Gate and a little bit more recently, but not brand new, Lover's Lane. And I understand that you have a degree in agricultural business from Cal Poly, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are on balancing the needs between creating more housing and also the requirements from the state to create more housing and the need to preserve ag land, because there is still some agricultural land in the second district.
Yeah, preserving ag land and green space has got to be number one when it comes to development. Taking any ag land and turning it into housing, it scares me. I personally worked on that property where the Lover's Lane for a vineyard manager, Welch Vineyard Management, when I was a kid. And, you know, he was always complaining about that specific spot on the lot, you know, having low production, and it was old vines in. So, you know, it's never been replanted. It's never had any type of regenerative agriculture happen. So, you know, until something like that happens, to just write it off and say, let's build housing on it, it's bad, I think is the wrong way to go. Infill is possibly the topic that I never hear anybody talk about. And I talk about cooperative housing quite a bit, and people always ask me to explain what that is. You know, we have tons of community foundation, NCO, lots of nonprofits in the community that really do great things. And you know, they could start stepping up with cooperative housing developments and putting their monies into solving this problem if they wanted to. I know it's scary to get into housing, but there is a lot of cities across America doing this, and we could always look to them before we, you know, the reactive ways that we usually have, and be proactive and make a plan actually that we implement instead of just kind of going for it and hoping it works out.
Yeah, and there are quite a few properties in Ukiah, large buildings in Ukiah and Willits and around the county that people are always kind of eyeing for better uses. But then you get into these huge sticky questions of absentee landlords and private property, and nobody wants to pull the eminent domain card. What do you think that you could do to ally with people who might be able to influence decisions about how to use property that's private and just kind of sitting there?
You know, everybody wants their land to be the highest, best use possible. And you know, 20, 30 years ago, commercial, industrial was the highest, best use for some of these properties. And you know, we're having a lot of businesses shutting their doors and a lot of manufacturing that's going out of town because it's not achievable anymore in the Ukiah City area. So, you know, they still are holding on to this idea that the highest, best use of their property is to rent to somebody who comes in and does commercial or industrial. So, you know, having these conversations with them as somebody who knows the industry in and out and understands development and how to make variances happen, I believe, you know, some of these people would open their ideas to possibly doing a little bit of variance and creating these cooperative style housing. There, you know, a lot of these buildings they have the infrastructure ready to go. We're talking about just a little bit of updating, modernizing to make them livable. A lot of them have back cottages and little studios that they lived in while they were here in the area. And so there's housing already on a lot of these lots. They're not being used or advertised.
And do you think that local government is in a position to offer incentives or support to landlords or property owners who might be thinking, you know, being a landlord is just a huge profession that you have to learn? Do you feel like you have a role to help people enter that business venture?
Yeah, I mean, at some point, the county and city are going to have to start discussing people inside in-house learning how to do things like property management, because it's becoming such a human need in our community that if they're not going to allow it to be solved by the free market, which obviously is never going to be able to catch up to the housing needs that we need, at some point the county and city are going to have to figure out, you know, some sort of a housing structure internally. They have the people, the development departments and everybody who understands all this. So why they wouldn't be able to put this together, I don't see why it would be an issue.
Okay, well, we've got another minute before 6:15, and I'm going to open up the phone lines. The phone number here is 895-2448, and I'm going to ask callers to please get right to your questions if you have something you'd like to ask Joel Soniela, candidate for second district supervisor. And please keep the questions, no long comments. But we don't have a call yet.
Don't make this too easy on me, everyone. Call in if you have a question, because yeah. I look forward to answering the people's questions. I can answer these interviews all day, but it's great to hear from the people.
Yeah, and do make it easy on me by calling in and doing my job for me. I was going to stay a little bit on some Ukiah-centric things, but since you were mentioning industry and local government working with industry, I'd like to veer off onto Measure V, which was on the Board of Supervisors' agenda today. And at the end of a discussion, which was about an hour of public comment, people asking the board to enforce Measure V, they voted 4-1 to direct County Council to come back with an enforcement plan focused on mitigating expense and a firmer intention to collaborate with industry, obviously timber companies, and it's not just MRC. There are a few landowners, and Devin Jones mentioned that there are small timber companies that are interested in this outcome also, but they want to help reach compliance with a willingness to fast-track to fast-track solutions where they work. So what do you think about that decision and the progress of Measure V, which has been languishing for a while?
Yeah. Like most measures and things that and bonds that pass at our county level, it was done with this great concept and an idea and thought, but the implementation was not, there wasn't enough infrastructure put into how the implementation of it would happen. I'm in full support of the measure and do believe that, you know, that we have to come up with a different method for thinning out these trees that are being left for standing. And, you know, there has to be another product or another way. I mean, the bottom line of large industry timber can't be the only reason why we make a decision on something. I understand that it has to benefit them as well, because that's the one who's getting affected the most by it. But we have to have another way to turn this into a product that we can and benefit as a community and generate revenue from. That's kind of my take on it.
All right. Well, we do have a call.
Back to the question of housing. As a supervisor, how would you see interacting with the planning and building department to perhaps make the whole process of building less onerous? And I'll take my answer on the air. The requirements and everything are really, really harsh. They keep people from building housing that other people might want, you know, that they could rent. Maybe there could be something like, a whole zoning thing which would make it easier if you plan to build rentals or low-income rentals. And I'll go on the air and listen. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, caller.
So, I mean, you know, we don't want to make it too laxed and then have buildings that are going up that have issues around different codes that actually make that have improved the building over the years. But at the end of the day, the fees and most of the monies that you have to come up with up front in order to do these buildings, you know, it scares most people away. And so why we wouldn't be able to waive those fees for certain developments, such as they're doing with ADUs in smaller units. I don't believe that ADUs are the answer to the problem. So I do believe they are a solution to small part of it, but most people want to live in something that's bigger than a small dwelling. But removing those fees and allowing for quicker timing so that things can get pushed through quicker. Right now, our development departments in both county and city are so backed up that it could take, I was personally affected by it on a building that I own with a brother of mine, and somebody did some damage to the building and we had to fix it. It took 8 weeks to pull a permit and to start getting that building back up and running. And that was just pulling a permit to fix one wall. I can't imagine the regulations and things you have to go through to build an entire house. So laxing back on the policy on homes that actually are going to be livable units. You know, if somebody wants to build something that doesn't have proper electrical or proper foundations, you know, I'm not for that. If we're going to build stuff, it has to last and it has to be good in those areas. But some of the regulations that are being implemented, the fire sprinklers, which are a great thing in larger homes and things, but in a small cottage, maybe we could come up with something better than that cost. It's one of the most costly things in building.
And one of the things that local government can't really control is the cost of building materials and the cost of labor. And what do you think that you can do on a local level to help ease that or create incentives or work with state and federal partners to get money to help ease the financial burden of just building after you've got your permits in hand?
Yeah. Getting back to making the products locally here, there is wood production happening in our community. So, you know, figuring out how to keep those products here and use them locally as opposed to shipping them to wherever we get the best prices for. You know, I have friends that they mill all their own wood and they do all the work themselves and significantly decrease the cost of their building because they had a friend who had a mill. It's small units. They're not large, obviously. But yeah, figuring out how to produce our own materials, because if you don't have to pay someone to ship it from outside areas or pay for transportation of things, you cut the cost of a lot of your materials.
So callers, listeners, constituents, if you have a question for Joel Soniela, who's a candidate for supervisor in the 2nd District, the number to call is 895-2448. And I'm going to go back to some more Ukiah-centric ideas, since that's pretty much your district. Both Fort Bragg and the city of Ukiah are exploring ways that they can maybe eventually afford energy independence from PG&E, since we all remember the PSPS. We have a caller. Let's take that question. Caller, you are live on the air.
Hi, I have one question. I would be interested in, I'm a big Ted Williams fan, and I'd be interested to know what the candidate thought of him. And also, we have invasive species, acacia, Scotch broom, and pampas. And I don't really know of any county program to kind of help alleviate that. And, you know, when you go to, I'm in the coastal zone, I got a permit to build, and I had to do a lot of environmental stuff. But my neighbor is covered with acacia trees, which you can, you know, sort of blowing over and infecting my property. And I just wondered if you had any thoughts about invasive species in the county. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, thanks. So let's stick to your thoughts about controlling invasive species. I know that pesticides are a huge issue for a lot of folks, and that the coastal zone is not the only place that is dealing with invasive plants and also fire mitigation. So let's take the second half of the caller's question.
How to control invasive species in the community? You know, we'd have to work with organizations that actually have boots on the ground and people that can actually achieve fixing this problem. You know, like Mendocino County Resource Conservation District, I just recently met with them, RCD, they go by, and it sounded like they're a non-regulatory company, so they'll come in and they won't report you if they find something that's, you know, needs to be fixed. They are looking to help you solve problems on a non-regulatory standard. So, you know, bringing people in like that who have years of conservation experience and asking them how to solve a problem like that would probably be your best bet, because you alone or me alone with a shovel going around trying to fix the problem is never going to work. It's going to have to take lots of boots on the ground. And I definitely would never want to go the herbicide route to get rid of an invasive species. I think there's too much damage that comes to other parts of our ecosystems. So I would love to talk more about that, because I don't know those plants, and I'm not sure if they are truly invasive species, but I'll take your word for it.
All right. Well, thank you. We have another caller. Caller, you're live on the air.
Good evening. This is Mark. I'm a District 2 voter, and I'm in the process of educating myself about the, you know, three candidates I'm looking at. And I just wondered, Joel, do you have anything you'd like to point out that you think is a distinction between yourself and the other candidates? Not that I'm trying to egg you on to say anything negative about anybody, but I'm just wondering if you have any areas of difference you've noted. And I'll listen for the answer on the air, and thanks for doing this.
All right. How do you stand out in the field?
You wouldn't have to worry about me going negative. It's not my campaign. I'm not going to be doing that. So I believe that I stand out. I've had a short career after my college experience at San Luis Obispo, coming home in finance. And I believe that my finance background sets me apart from anyone on the board currently or anybody that I'm going up against as a competitor in this campaign. You know, being able to analyze budgets and actually talk about finances and get into the weeds of what's happening with the monies in this community is something I think we've lacked at the board level for Actually, I don't know any time in my existence that I've ever seen someone who was truly versed in financial literacy and actually understood budgets and variances. There's always been a department that handles that, and they report to the supervisors, and they take those reports very strongly, and nobody ever questions the what's happening or why there's variances in certain places. And so for me, financial transparency is going to be what sets me apart, I believe, from all the candidates that I'm going up against.
All right, we've got a few more minutes. Callers, if you've got a question for Joel Soniela, candidate for supervisor in the 2nd District, you can call 895-2448. And while we're waiting for a call, can you tackle the question of the city of Ukiah exploring ways to go energy independent? And do you think that you could bring anything to that effort on the county level?
Yes, we should have been having these conversations decades ago. Why we're still having it now and still not at a level of being able to have our own dependency. I talk to people while I'm door knocking a lot, and you know they're saying they would do the solar panels, which would feed back to the grids and help give us more energy transparency or more energy stabilization. And they just say they won't do it because there's no incentive. It's a 30-year, sometimes 20-year payback, and they don't see the benefit. They're 65 years old. By the time they're coming to the end of their life, they're going to barely be paying this thing off, and it's not worth it to them to do it. So, getting solar is, I believe, something that we should really be looking into. There's so many houses, especially in the Ukiah area, that have perfect ability to be able to put these, not just on roofs, but in the community. And along the house lines, I'm not sure about putting them on roofs all the time because I get weird about, big bolt holes going into my roofs. And if I don't have the funding to fix a roof, then I think we have another call.
It does look like the phone lines are up.
Okay.
Oh, caller, you're live on the air.
It does look like the phone lines are up.
Oh, can you turn off your radio? It sounds a little watery.
I'm live on the air? Okay.
All right.
Well, my question is that according to our general plan, we're required to put in a certain percentage of low-cost housing. So of all new housing, a certain percentage has to be low-cost housing, yet it costs the builder, the developer, exactly the same for a regular house as a low-cost house. So, Joel, would you consider that the Board of Supervisors might find a fund to compensate the builders for what they don't get when they sell the house at a low cost price?
All right, thank you, caller. And this is probably going to have to be our last question, so go ahead and tackle it.
I don't know if creating an incentive for people who are selling low cost housing will fix the problem. There has to be other alternatives than contractors building low-income housing. We have RCHDC, Danco, different companies that have gotten involved in this, and they pool 1% money and the 1% tax monies together, and it takes years to do it, but they're able to do it, and they control this housing for 35-plus years with contracts that they set with the state. I don't know if it's going to ever be appealing for a developer to build low-income housing when it comes to, case management on site and housing that actually applies to what the low income needs. So I think steering toward places like RCHDC and really getting them involved in the conversation at the county level to tell us how they've been successful at building low income housing and controlling that for long periods of time would be the way to go, is bring in the professionals that are doing it currently and ask them how we can do it at the county level.
All right, well, we've got another call, but we are down to 1 minute and 15 seconds. Oh, we're going to take it. Caller, you're live on the air.
Hey, good evening. I have a question for Joel. My name's Glenn, calling from Redwood Valley. Hey, I was wondering, the state has a plan to build a new courthouse about a half mile east of the current courthouse. And what can the supervisors, and specifically maybe the 2nd District supervisor, do about stalling or completely getting rid of that plan? Because it would just kill downtown Ukiah. And I just wonder what Joel's feelings are about that.
15 seconds.
My email, do you have a pen and paper? Write it down and we can have a further conversation. I have 15 seconds to answer this and don't think I'd be able to. So Joel joel@joelforsupervisor.com is my email, and email me that question, as well as the other person who asked me about how I feel about certain supervisors. Feel free to send me those as well. You can find that email on my website, joelforsupervisor.com. I'm sorry I couldn't answer that question. It's too much for 15 seconds.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming in, Joel, and make sure that you tune in 6 o'clock for our other conversations with our supervisors through next week. I'm Sarah Reith with KZYX, and Joel Soniela, candidate for 2nd District Supervisor.
Thank you for having me.